Hello, hello. This is Fernando Fiore, El Presidente, and you are listening to the Mouths of the South podcast on VerySouthTucker.com. Yole.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast. Matt Doyle joining us now on the Mouths of the South podcast.
And Alexi Lalas joins us right now,
bringing you the best coverage of Atlanta United FC. Paul Tenorio joining us now. Kristen Hennage on the Mouths of the South podcast.
The president of Atlanta United FC, Darren Eales.
Happy to have Doug Robertson on the Mouths of the South podcast, AJC writer for Atlanta United. The biggest names and exclusive interviews on the Mouths of the South podcast.
He'll do it again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Let's go. Mouths of the South podcast, Dirty South Soccer. Thanks to our sponsor, CrossFit Vesuvio. I am Eric Quintana, and with me, per usual, not as always, but per usual.
Usually here.
Mr. Josh Bagriansky. How's it going, man?
It's going well, Eric. Ready to bring this weekend in style. We got Chicago coming in tomorrow, or going there, and had a horrifying evening last night with the men's national team. Turned out to be pretty comfortable, but
horrifying.
I was a scared man at halftime.
You were scared. Okay.
I wasn't scared.
Well, that's a first. I wasn't overly confident. I wasn't scared though.
So I was more stressed out than you during a match.
I was looking forward to Kenwyn Jones scoring some goals, and unfortunately, he came close, but it didn't actually happen. And a lot of people wondered. I know that Atlanta United sent out. I think they might have deleted it afterwards. I don't know. Actually, maybe not. Hmm. They sent out a tweet saying, wishing Kenwyn good luck. And I sat there and read through the comments, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, what? Why are people hating on this so much? Well, you guys realize that if Kenwyn does well, then he's, you know, coming back to form or whatever we want to call it. Maybe it's just the international look, but at least we can have some confidence in him as our own player coming back, that maybe in the last 15 minutes or so he can get us that game-winning or insurance goal or whatever,
sure,
in those last 15 minutes. And if he does extremely well, you're talking about maybe a trade piece down the line.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's certainly not unheard of for a player to find their form during internationals. But I did not want him. I mean, obviously, I know Atlanta United, class move. You got to support your boys. I didn't want him to score. I didn't want anything out of Kenwyn last night.
Because,
man,
I was that confident that the United States was going to win. Ooh. I wanted Kenwyn to score at least one.
That header he had came off the crossbar.
I wanted him to look good. Did you see the little move he did to get by the defender?
Yeah,
I forget who he did it on,
yeah,
but yeah, it looked pretty nice.
Yeah. He played fine, I thought. And, it's a big win. It's a big win for the U.S. Obviously, I think that at this point, particularly considering the way things started in the opening two match days, getting smashed by Mexico and Costa Rica, I think that finally we're in a position in the U.S. where we really feel in control and confident about qualifying for Russia next summer. Finally. This is the first time I felt that way the entire hex. So
yeah, no,
it's nice.
I feel good about it now. What did you think of the match overall?
I thought it was a tale of two halves, really, Eric. The first half, I think, was pretty even. Trinidad and Tobago really impressed me. I think a lot of people expected them to sit back and absorb the pressure, and they went at us right from the beginning. Obviously, Kenwyn Jones had the biggest chance of the first half coming off the crossbar. Tim Howard worked a couple more times. But I thought in the second half, you saw, particularly after the first goal, the U.S. start to take control. And to me, there were a few big parts of this game, but individually, I mean, Christian Pulisic just... What a fantastic performance from the young man, and to me, he's the guy that made the difference and kind of pushed the team over the top in the second half, which is for an 18-year-old is no easy task. So I thought it was a kind of a tale of two halves. Certainly, it was a game where both sides kind of rode their momentum when they were in control of the match. But I thought Pulisic kind of pushed us over the line, and there were some other positives as well. One thing you and I talked about, Eric, was Villafania at left back. I thought he was fantastic.
He was my man of the match. I know that a lot of his work was mostly done in the first half, but my gosh, the chances he created, and clearly Trinidad and Tobago adjusted. But, I mean, we've been looking for a left back for so long.
Oh, my goodness.
And we have one for as long as he plays. I mean, honestly, like, one day we're going to look at him and think, my gosh, we need to get someone else for him. But right now, appreciate the player you have in Jorge Villafania, because he is fantastic on that left side as that left back. A position the U.S. men's national team have been struggling with for as long, I mean, the longest time now.
It's been a while. I mean, and one big thing that it really does is it enables Fabian Johnson to go forward. He's been kind of pigeonholed into that left fullback position because there just hasn't been anyone else to put there. And you can see his style of play is to go forward. and to get involved in the attack. So you get a guy like Viafania stepping in that you can feel good about, and it allows Johnson to go forward and express himself a little bit more. So that was a big positive for me in terms of, you know, we talked kind of about on the last podcast a little bit about how there's some uncertainty, and it's a year away, but heading into Russia, there's some uncertainty, and certainly the left-back position was one of those places, and that doesn't seem to be the case 48 hours later after we talked. So really, really great stuff from
this. This is the first time we've seen Yedlin in quite a while, too, right?
With the full national team, yeah. It's been a little bit, but I think it's no surprise that he's right back, in that spot.
He looked strong. I mean, I think he's always going to be that same player that defensively he's going to be a bit of a liability, not maybe as much anymore, but
right.
We've always kind of known him to be that kind of defensive liability, and now after watching him yesterday, and again, it's one game, so my big issue with a lot of these players is consistency, and right now Jorge Viafania has been one of those guys, and I'm like, all right, we know he's been consistent, and he looks like he's going to continue to be consistent mm-hmm. As long as he's playing at left back, which enables Fabian Johnson to move into the midfield.
He did have his best game, yeah.
He was bad. Yeah. He just didn't really do much.
It wasn't a good performance for him, but we know the value of him in the attack is certainly greater than it is in defense. And, I mean, overall, I just thought, you know, it was a good performance. It was certainly nervy at times, but I think the biggest positive aside from the result is I did see some progression in terms of players sliding into their roles and kind of starting to get an idea of who's going to be where in Russia next summer. And, of course, for the first time, I feel confident that we are going to be there. This has certainly been a more stressful qualifying cycle than the U.S. has experienced in quite some time. So well done to the boys. On to Mexico tomorrow. I've read a lot of people saying that we should go there and go at them. I don't necessarily agree. I think a more tempered approach is the way to go.
I very much disagree with you. I think that's been the narrative as long as I've been really, really following this team.
Yeah.
Is all right. We're gonna go into Mexico City and you know play very defensive, bunker, and see if we can't come out with the point. Maybe if we get lucky, we come out with a win, which has never happened before.
Yeah,
but in my opinion,
well, not in a qualifier, it hasn't.
Yeah, in my opinion, you got to go and try to give it to them. This is the best attacking team we've seen in so long.
Mm-hmm.
You finally have some kind of stabilized starting 11 for the most part. You kind of know exactly what you're going to get
mm-hmm.
game in and game out.
Mm-hmm.
These are the moments you go in and try to attack. And not only would you try to attack, but you would Mexico would be on their heels for at least the first 10 minutes. If you can squeeze a goal in then, I would say at least for the first 10, 15 minutes, give them all you got.
That's something that we've done before. And actually, I can't remember if it was the last cycle or the cycle before where it must have been two cycles ago where we jumped on them early in Azteca and Charlie Davies had a goal and a great pass from Landon Donovan. Unfortunately, the altitude and Mexico caught up to us. But I think there's definitely some reason to go at them from the beginning. What I do really worry about, though, is in that altitude against a very good Mexico team that's firing on all cylinders, I don't have much faith in the U.S. team to go in there and say, we're going to play our way and we're going to impose our style in the match. I think Mexico just too much quality, and at home, that could be a problem.
I understand the trepidation of going into Mexico.
You have
City.
Nothing to lose from your side, Eric.
I mean, you've gotten 3 points. You're back
right.
in the top
that's
of the mix.
True.
You know, you're not looking at... You know, you've gotten the points you needed to kind of get back into this. You obviously still want to keep winning and still want to keep coming away with points. But look, you saw the game against Mexico and Columbus,
mm-hmm.
and we lost 2-1, and ultimately we lost on a corner, failing to mark on a corner.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they beat us tactically. They looked a lot better than we did tactically because we were still messing around.
Yeah, I mean,
they
dominated the match run of play
as
well.
And I'm not...
You hit the crossbar twice, I think.
But again, we were still in the game. At the
mm-hmm.
very end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think about that and think about how much better they looked, how much more they've grown under Bruce Arena, how much better they look on the attack, how much more firepower they have in guys like Nagby, moving Fabian Johnson in the midfield. Dempsey looks like he's coming back to form a little bit. Not that he really went anywhere, but
he
looks good. Altidore is the only one where I'd be like, I wish he wasn't the automatic starter game in and game out, but... You know, that might be one thing
that
we
still change.
Yeah, sure, but you got Pulisic, who's incredible now.
Yeah.
Again, Nagby, Viafania, who again yesterday, if you get the same kind of performance out of him that you did, if you get the same kind of performance out of him in Mexico, you're looking at hopefully maybe at least one of those going in.
Yeah.
One of those crosses landing on Altidore's head or something going in. Maybe early, maybe not. But this team just looks a whole hell of a lot better than it did last time. This is exactly the same scenario Mexico is dealing with when – sorry, this is the exact same scenario Atlanta's going to deal with when they go up to Chicago in the sense that they're going to play essentially a different team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I see.
A different setup, you know?
From the one you faced last time. It's going to be interesting. I think if I was going to go there and attack, the main thing I would say is, like you said, Eric, you don't have a ton to lose. There are still matches left to play. You got the 3 points in TNT. One other thing about the U.S., though, and I said I'd like to go there and play defensively. Even if they go bunker in Mexico, I have much more faith in this team to go score in Azteca than teams past, because you look at a player like a Pulisic, a Bobby Wood, a Fabian Johnson, a Clint Dempsey. So you have a lot of creative players that can make difference in space in the counterattack. So even if we go there and do sit back, I think that we're much more dangerous going forward on the counterattack than we have in the past. But certainly the back four, and we were just discussing this with Villafania and hopefully Yedlin setting into those fullback positions, and I assume we'll see Brooks and Cameron again in the center. I think it'll be a real big test for those guys in the back four who, particularly centrally, I thought Brooks and Cameron were a bit hit and miss against TNT. I think they'll have to be better in Azteca this weekend.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things that are going to have to be better, especially, mm-hmm. I mean, you're going up against a better quality opponent. I mean, if you saw the game last night, Mexico against Honduras, it wasn't Mexico's first team. It was like the B-plus team.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see the A-plus team
they're waiting.
Come mm-hmm. out on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sunday. And it's going to be a challenge. I'm not saying it's not going to be easy, but you got to go in with some kind of confidence. You can't go in expecting hoping to get the draw. It's just
that to me is just a loser's
mentality. And if I'm Bruce Arena, I'm telling you, we're going for the win. If we end up, you know, it's 1-1 at in the 80th minute, fine. Then we'll talk about bunkering. But we're going for the win otherwise.
I would say when I say bunker, I mean you set up defensively, but you look to get forward and counter. I think it would be a real shame, particularly considering where the U.S. is right now in the hex in terms of where they are on the table, if you go in there playing for 0-0. I wouldn't mind them accepting the fact that Mexico is going to control large portions of the game and sorts of possession and have that serve as your attack, taking the ball off them when they get forward and going on the counter.
Fine. If we want to do that, if we're...
And that's Bruce Arena. That's kind of
vintage
Bruce Arena.
If we're a national team that's going to do that against Mexico, then I don't want to see Altidore start.
Oh,
because he's
agree.
Not someone known for his speed. I'd rather see someone like Bobby Wood in his place.
And I
or
think
Jordan
that's
Morris.
Possible.
I don't care. They're both a lot faster, a lot more mobile than Josie Altidore.
And if you look at the TNT match, I think there's a reason Dempsey comes off so early in the second half and that Bobby Wood doesn't start. I think there's a very good chance both those guys being saved somewhat for this match in Azteca. Because to me, there's no reason to take Clint Dempsey off in the 60th minute. I think it was pretty early in the second half. He wasn't happy. And then certainly Bobby Wood is a guy that maybe Bruce Arena sees more as a guy that helps him in a counterattacking type of style as a more pacey, direct type of player that can play wide or up top. So I wouldn't surprise me based on the way Arena handled those guys in terms of minutes against TNT. It certainly leads me to believe that we might see some combination of Dempsey and Wood and maybe not seeing Altidore in the first 11 tomorrow. That being said, I mean, Altidore always starts, so
I know.
We'll
I just,
see.
I he's the one player now. It used to be Michael Bradley, but now that Michael Bradley's been asked to do different things,
yeah.
I can understand why he does start.
And that's actually one of the great things about Bruce Arena, I think, from Klinsmann is,
yeah,
is being okay,
him,
Michael, sit back, protect the back
right.
four, don't go crazy.
He's
box
basically
box.
He's that Lorenowitz role
right.
for
uh-huh.
the ESPN's actually,
yeah.
if you want to put it in Atlanta
uh-huh.
United perspective. But to me, if you're going to be a team that counters, you got to look at another alternative other than Altidore. They're really. At this point, he still has skill. I'm not saying he's you know washed up or anything. He's still relatively young, but he's just not. I don't know. He's when you look at guys like Bobby Wood and Jordan Morris and the dynamic nature of their play, it's different from what Josie Altidore brings. Josie Altidore is much more one dimensional than both Bobby Wood and Jordan Morris. And that's what if you're going to be a counterattacking team, that's what I want to see different.
Right.
I want to see look Altidore, you're not doing it for us. He didn't do
I
it in the first
clear.
Half.
Yeah.
He didn't really do it in the I mean, He stringed a couple of good passes together, but he didn't really do it in the second half either.
Yeah, and you say he's a one-dimensional player, Eric. I tend to agree, and I would also argue I don't think he's that great at that one dimension either. He's not an extremely dominant aerial and hold-up player.
I think in Toronto he's a beneficiary of playing with guys like Giovinco.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, they're a fantastic team top to bottom, and I think you look at the results that Josie had in England, and I think it speaks volumes about, you know, you talk about potential and being young. I mean, maybe he's a quote-unquote young age, but he's played long enough to where he is what he is. And it's going to be interesting to see how Arena handles it, because certainly he's been that guy as a striker, and now you've got a Bobby Wood maybe breaking his way in, but also you have some creative players back in the midfield that can get in and score goals and create. So you don't necessarily need a guy like Josie Altidore, who I felt was up there simply because of his size and presence in the past. Now you actually have some guys behind him that can play
two
creatively.
Guys behind him.
Yeah, exactly. That can play creatively and create for themselves, which means you don't necessarily need a big hold up player there up top in Josie Altidore. Be interesting to follow to see what happens.
Brad Genchi says we should have a chip on our shoulder for losing at home. Every player should want revenge.
That's
for
true.
That loss.
Yeah.
And I got to agree. The way you lost, kind of last minute, the fact that it was such a mess with Klinsmann trying to trot out the 3-5-2 or whatever it was, and then post-game saying it wasn't at the whatever. I was at that post-game, and I remember thinking, everyone, I'm telling you, every reporter just looked around like, Michael Bradley just told us it was a 3-5-2,
right,
and you're
right.
Telling us it's a 4-4? I forget exactly what he said.
That international break where we see Mexico and Costa Rica is one of the biggest, the two most chaotic games I've seen. I mean, in terms of,
ridiculous.
I've never seen a U.S. team quit, and they quit in Costa Rica and left basically Sunil Gulati with no choice but to fire Klinsmann.
And maybe that was part of the plan, to be honest.
Yeah, who knows? And it's the only time I've ever seen that before, and certainly that speaks volumes when you see a national team that never quits, is known for their fitness and going hard, go to Costa Rica and just give up. I tend to agree. I think they basically quit on their manager.
If I'm one of those players, I am going with this sense of revenge.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm prepping for the 3 o'clock in the morning fire alarms going off in the hotel room.
Sure.
I'm prepping
That's
for everything.
Calf. Yeah,
everything. And I'm going into that building with nothing but business in mind, and I want to beat the crap out of this team because of how badly we looked and how badly we performed, and how badly we disappointed our nation based on our play, based off all the dramatics that were going on off the field and on the field in that match. You know, it's. You got to go in there with that chip on your shoulder. You got to go in there with that sense of revenge. You got to go in there with, you know, and really bring it to them. I say, again, if you can't get an early goal in the first 10, 15 minutes, then sure, maybe you talk about not going balls to the wall.
Yeah.
But you got to take it to them. I think going in there with a defensive mindset is a loser's mentality.
Well, I don't think playing for a 0-0 is the right way to go.
How often do those... do those tactical in CONCACAF? How often do those tactics really work for the lesser team? For the less tactical, less whatever. And it's not even
to be fair. The lesser team is like Panama.
I agree.
You know, it's not.
But still, I mean, at some point we got to not be that team.
So I would say, yeah, I would.
And
like
if there's
to see...
any time to do to go out on the offensive there. It's now, because you've got guys like Pulisic and you've got this attack that is
true.
So dynamic and on fire right now.
I think we'll score a goal there, if I'm being honest. I mean, that's kind of a bold prediction, but I feel better about this team. And again, I think we should set up a little more conservatively, but I do absolutely think this team is going to create chances and score goals, whether they're trying to control the run of play or sitting back and going direct on the counter. I definitely think this is a team that could create some chances. One thing you mentioned, Eric, is the revenge to Mexico. A big part of it also is just proving themselves to CONCACAF. You know, a lot of people rip on U.S. soccer, but in this region, U.S. and Mexico are a step above everyone else. And certainly with the way things started in the hex, I think there were some thoughts that maybe, you know, Costa Rica, Honduras, even a Panama side could maybe sneak in there and make some noise. You go get a result in El Azteca and all that talk is gone.
Two other guys that got some international work in, Miguel Almirón with Paraguay, 77 minutes before he was taken off, which I would have rather have seen that. You know, I'd rather have seen him come off at halftime since he has a game.
I'd rather see him not even travel, but you know,
I agree.
How annoying are international friendlies?
Now they are. Before we have a team, I loved them because that was the only soccer I could really, really get behind and root for, and I had a vetting interest.
Okay.
Now okay. it's, you know, everything is Atlanta United, and I don't care. Again, I even want Kenwyn Jones to do well internationally because that either means he's going to come into form with Atlanta United or he's going to be a very valuable trade piece. That's why I don't understand the people that were crapping on Atlanta on that tweet, but from Atlanta United, but.
Well, what do you expect him to do? I mean,
I don't know.
I hope you look terrible, Kenwyn. Go U.S.
I was never under the impression that the U.S. men's national team was going to lose that game. I thought at the very least they were going to draw, and because of that, I thought, all right, Kenwyn, get one if you can. if you can, even if it's the first goal of the match,
I can't believe
even if it puts Trinidad and
Tobago. You were the one that was easygoing, and I was the stressed one during
match. I was fine.
This is really
weird. I was very calm during that game. But the other one, obviously, Kenwyn Jones, who played, I forget how many minutes.
82
minutes.
Yeah, 82. Yeah.
And he looked not terrible. He looked pretty much the same he does with Atlanta United. He had a few moments in that game. Again, one header going off the crossbar that could have easily been a goal for Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had that little step-over move, and I forget who the defender was, but
I can't remember, remember that.
It was a nice little move that made him look good. I just think his mobility is so poor, and he just doesn't move unless he's inside the final third.
Yeah,
he's not moving very much.
Right,
even when he receives the ball, in the middle third, once he gets rid of it, he's not moving very fast to get into that final third.
I mean,
he's not positioning himself well. And, I mean, we've seen that with Atlanta United where the press does not work with him up top. That's why we've gone to Tito Villalba, and we gave him a fair shot because we're paying him all this money. We had to see what we had in him.
Yeah.
It's just how – this is the nature of the business. But what I do like is that Tata basically said, this isn't working. Tito, you're up top.
Yeah.
Kenwyn, you're off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else is there? But it brings up an interesting point when it comes to Almiron this weekend. Kenwyn won't be there because he has, I think, another international World Cup qualifier at some point this weekend.
Yeah.
But Almiron is flying back. I believe he flew back today. He rejoined the team today. He'll be there in Chicago tomorrow. I don't think anyone expects him to start. It does bring up an interesting question as to what Atlanta United does going into Chicago in terms of their starting lineup. What changes are obviously going to be made? How much time are you willing to give Joseph Martinez if he's assuming he's good to go and he's going to play in this game at some point? It's an interesting conversation, and we've heard a lot of opinions. What are yours?
In terms of who slots in that number 10 role?
Yeah, let's start with the number 10 role.
God, it's so difficult.
And if you're on Facebook Live and want to shout out
please
think our starting 11 might look like with Almiron, assuming Almiron and Joseph Martinez aren't going to start.
Right.
Not saying they won't get in the game, but just assuming they won't start in that game, let us know what you think.
This is such a tough one because we've seen without Almiron in that spot, there's really been no one to fill it in. It's been Gressel in the past. He's been playing so well out wide. He really struggled in that position. I wouldn't mind seeing Kevin Kratz slide into that position, a technical guy that feels comfortable in the center of the pitch. It does mean that you are not going to have the forward-thinking midfield trio you maybe have had with Almiron playing in front of Carmona and Lerwentowicz and maybe Asamoah from the wide players. But to me, he's just someone that – and he hasn't played a ton this year, but to me, he's someone who would be comfortable – in that position and not lose you the game and not make mistakes. Whereas Gressel, I think we've seen the types errors that he can make.
He's more used to that role.
Yeah, and he's been fantastic outright. You don't have a ton of options. There's really no wrong answer here.
Well, you don't have Peterson. Jacob Peterson
is
still out with concussion symptoms, I guess. I've heard Home Before Dark
kind of
complain about, where the hell is Peterson. I have seen concussion issues that linger for like months. I had a girl on the girls varsity team I coach that was out the entire season with a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's Jacob Peterson's issue, but he has been out a while. Last time I saw him was like at least a month ago.
And he had an ankle problem as well.
Yeah, but
I don't know if that's bothering
you. The last time I saw him was about a month ago, and he was going through these typical concussion recovery protocol things. But as we're speaking about Kevin Kratz, he tweets out at this was so long ago. Never mind.
But he did tweet it, so read it to
the people. Looking forward to play against Bastian Schweinsteiger again, and he references Chicago Fire Atlanta United game. So I wonder if he does know he's getting the start. I got to think that you don't wait until last minute to tell someone that they're starting if they're not a normal starter, right?
That's a good point. I don't know. I mean, he
as
might
a coach,
just be.
I wouldn't.
Did he tag Schweinsteiger? He might just be fishing for likes, because Schweini has got probably a gazillion followers, but
I mean, he's also German, so I mean,
yeah, of course, yeah, the countrymen, and I know Gressel said he's excited to go up against Schweinsteiger as well. Schweinsteiger, to me, I think he. We talked a lot about DPs and the impact they have on their sides, and how the older DPs often it goes in the other direction often, and
one of the rarities in
MLS.
And
that is a completely different team in terms of the results from the last time we saw them, and also the way they play the game. They've become more of a short passing type of team, which is something I never would have expected based on what we saw when they came to town. And he's just had it's early. Let's see if he can stay fit, but he's had a fantastic impact on that midfield and that side altogether.
And this is why I think someone like Kevin Kratz, who, from what I've seen in the limited amount of time that we've been able to see him, he's much more dynamic on the ball.
Sure.
He's a guy that as soon as he passes, he's going to run to put himself in a better position, mm-hmm. receive the ball to maybe get something going. Gressel was much more receive the ball with his back to whatever, his enemy, and then try to either pass it off to someone, and that pass usually was what caused him issues.
Right.
Again, being on the wing, we've talked about this before, but being on the wing, he's not asked to make those same passes. He's asked to attack the ball and attack the goal.
Right.
So that changes when you move him central, which is why I think there's no way, especially with how well it's been working, there's no way they move Gressel into the midfield.
It wouldn't
the center
sense.
Of the field, at least.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, you're either pulling, and I heard, I forget it was Rob Ushery or someone else at Dirty South Soccer mentioning moving Yamil central into that out of the own role.
And I think he could definitely play there.
Yeah, and moving Kratz out wide to that left side, taking Yamil's space, because that's where he's played normally when he's subbed in. But I'm fine with either one.
And I think with Martinez up top, Assad, I like it that 10, but it kind of leaves you on the wings not great with Gressel and Kratz. Although Gressel's been fantastic recently, but you start a rookie, a guy that's barely played in your wide position.
You sort of wonder with how Yamil kind of drifts centrally sometimes. You wonder if they won't just kind of drift, you know, swish whenever they get the opportunity.
And you know, another thing you can do is you start Yamil outside, and we already know he likes to drift in, and just really have him under directive to come in and get underneath. One thing that's interesting for me, too, is if you play Kratz there, and you play maybe a little more conservatively with those three through the center, one of the reasons that can play to your advantage is that means less time on the ball for Bastian Schweinsteiger.
And that's actually a point I was going to bring up a little later, but before we get into that real quick, I just think the three up top are going to stay the same. I think for this game, they've been working so well.
Yeah.
I think...
Unless Martinez gets in there and starts, which we don't think will happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, I think both Almiron and Jose Martinez might come in 70th, 75th minute or something like that. And it obviously depends on the scoreline and how... You know, just kind of the tone of the game for the most part. But I think Kratz will get that midfield role in place of Agumon. You got to figure out who is that backup anyway. This is a great opportunity. It's kind of forced, but it's a great opportunity to see if Kevin Kratz has what it takes to be in that midfield, at least in that role. Again, you're going to have the same back line from, I imagine, you'll have Carmona and Lorenwitz, you know, as those defensive midfielders. You mentioned Bastian Schweinsteiger and his impact on this Chicago Fire team. It's been night and day. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
It's great tactics. It's great. This team has kind of clicked since he's joined. It's like everyone is playing with a certain level of confidence that wasn't there before, and it's all because of Schweinsteiger's introduction to this team. It's been kind of crazy that they couldn't do this before.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to wonder, you know, what... Not wonder, you know exactly what's going on, but Bastian Schweinsteiger has added this sort of, you know, you've got Dax McCarty, who we know we won't be there on Saturday, but he's been this captain, this director, the captain from the back, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you've got Schweinsteiger, who's been allowed to kind of roam freely from side
to
side and pick out the passes that he wants.
Yeah.
The one thing, and you brought this up a little earlier, the one thing I think won't happen is I don't think he'll have a lot of time to pick out those passes, because the nature of Atlanta United's style of play is to press the ball.
Right. And not having McCarty there, I think, will make
it more difficult, too. But without that much time, Bastian Schweinsteiger, everyone's kind of nervous about this game. I think, a little more confident, because I simply think that without that time, assuming that Atlanta United can really remain the high-pressing team that they are, throughout the course of most of this game, at least, I think that Bastian Schweinsteiger, for the most part, is going to have enough time to switch the field. Is going to have enough time to pick out his passes. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be able to have time to pick out those passes to get his attack involved. And the attack right now is pretty much on fire. I think it's some of the best attack in MLS right now.
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, you've got Nikolic with...
Unless you have nine men, then they struggle, as Orlando knows.
You've got a lot of people with a lot of goals on that Chicago Fire team.
Well, and David Akam, to me, is playing the best he's played since he came to Chicago. And you mentioned this quickly, Eric. You mentioned the switching of the field from Schweinsteiger. So I know you're not a big fan of stats. I'm a big fan of
stats. I don't
like
numbers, man.
But here's an interesting one. So
not a fan of numbers.
Bastian Schweinsteiger, over nine long balls played per game for Chicago Fire. The next two guys are goalkeepers. An average per game, and then you've got Dax McCarty at five. So that really indicates the importance of getting to Schweinsteiger and not letting him hit the distribution from the back. One of the reasons you mentioned the attack kind of clicking, I think that's why, is now you have a guy who sits deep. You have a guy in McCarty that can take pressure off him, allow him time on the ball, and distribute with long diagonals from the back. And I think that's very difficult for teams to deal with, considering that Chicago is a team that likes to play more short passing style through the middle, and then suddenly you give Schweinsteiger time on the ball. He's hitting one of those wide men, Solignac or Akam, wide and high up the pitch, and make things very difficult for the opposition. So all the more reason to close this guy down. Leads the team in key passes. He's the one guy who's playing that accurate long ball on a team that otherwise likes short passes. So I think it's very, very critical that he's not allowed a lot of time on the ball. And McCarty not being there, I think, will definitely, we assume Juninho will slot in. McCarty not being there certainly will help Atlanta United a bit with Schweinsteiger.
I also look at, if it is going to be Kevin Kratz in the midfield, I think he's going to want to prove himself, not just for, you know, to be named that capable backup and, you know, for Almiron if anything should happen, but he's also going to try to make a name for himself for all the other teams that might be watching this game.
Of course.
You know, for future reference, you know? Yeah. And so if he can be that guy in the midfield, and he can – again, he hasn't had a lot of playing time. The playing time he has had, he's looked pretty good.
He looks comfortable.
He looks
–
more than anything, I think he looks confident.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he looks like he wants to prove to Tata Martino, to Atlanta United, to the fans, to everyone else watching,
and a guy that
he can play that role.
And he hasn't played much overseas the last few years either, so I think he's just trying to make a name for himself in general, showing that he can go out there and play. I think Kratz is probably the guy you put there.
That's my hope. I honestly... Because
I can't imagine he put Gressel there. It wouldn't make sense he's been playing.
We don't know how Tata Martino handles injury, at least coming back from injury.
Yeah.
Because for all we know, Joseph Martinez could be in the starting 11 tomorrow. I don't think it's going to happen, we haven't seen that scenario pop up yet.
Right. There's a lot in flux going into tomorrow's match in terms of the first 11, which is a shame because I think over the last few weeks we've seen the team really figure out what their best 11 was. But obviously you've got Martinez coming back, the Almiron situation. I know Kenwin wouldn't start, but that does affect, I think, who you dress. Right, you'll dress Vasquez instead. So there's a lot of you're going to see a little bit more variance than I think the team would like to offer, considering you've kind of found your best unit right now. And for a Chicago team that has been firing on all cylinders at home, it's gonna be an uphill battle, I think, Eric.
Here's my deal. Because they've looked so well at home,
right?
Because they look
and nothing
like
happens
a
in MLS as planned, right?
Nothing. Chicago fans, I'm sure, are on fire. They feel hot. They want that revenge.
Yeah.
MLS has a way of, again, giving you the middle finger when you think you know exactly what's going on. And I think last week against Orlando was kind of an anomaly. You can't really look at that game. I honestly, when I in prepping for this team and how they've changed and everything like that, I skipped Orlando City, that match, completely.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to learn from that.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part.
Yeah.
So the one thing you can't learn is that when their backs are against the wall, when they're up two men, they don't know how to score.
Sure.
Which is kind of weird considering the firepower they have up front.
I thought it was interesting. I thought they played a little bit. I don't want to say they played direct, but they didn't play correctly against nine men.
Yeah.
Where you should be really patient, holding the ball.
Well, like Atlanta United did when they were
exactly. And it's funny, if you watched that match, you would have just thought, you wouldn't have really known it was 11v9. You would have just thought one team was bunkering because Chicago was. It's not as if it was wave after wave of Chicago attack. One thing you talked about, Eric, is how the team has changed. Oh, we've got a question here from the Facebook Live.
Yeah, Sydney Hunt asked, how does the team remedy their issues defending set pieces? Okay. More time on the training ground, look to add bigger body, et cetera, or is it just a lapse of concentration? Here's the thing. I think a lot of those set pieces, started and ended with Gonzalez Perez
no
and
question.
His horrible defending. Sure, there was the initial goal from the first goal was him basically
wandered out of position.
Yeah, exactly. Wandered out of position.
Yeah.
The second was his not marking
or jumping
whatever
or anything
that
was about.
The third, I understand that the goal wasn't from Waston, but
right.
he was the guy marking him. Who then hit the ball back into play for, I forget who scored the third goal for
Parker.
Parker, yeah.
The other center back.
It all started and ended with Perez. And I think that if
no
Tata Martino is even the, I give Tata Martino a lot of credit for the coach that he is, but a middle school coach can look at that tape and go, listen, that can't happen again.
That would be unacceptable
what happened
for middle
there,
school.
That can't happen again. That's set piece defending 101.
Yeah.
And you blew it all three times.
Yeah.
I understand Waston's bigger. That can't happen again. So I got to imagine that not only did Gonzalez Perez get a good talking to, but the entire team, knowing that set pieces is a vulnerability, that's something that at least they had to have worked on. They had to have focused on. They had to have gone into training and thought, this is something we can't allow happen again. We can't get scored on
essentially
on three set pieces. And that's how they score all their goals. Like that can't happen.
And if you do get scored on a set piece, you can't afford to have it be from your own doing. Simple. And I felt all three of those goals were that way. One small part of the question here from Facebook Live is he asks, should we add a bigger body? I think that's interesting because
what bigger body are you going to add?
Who
else is there?
To me, on our current team, that's the problem because I don't know who else. That role of marking the other team's big players. Parker's not a big guy. Lorentowicz is tall, but I don't know that he moves well enough. Maybe he's the guy to do it. You mentioned that Kenwin should have been on Perez on the third goal. I thought that was a pretty adept point.
At least it makes it more challenging for Waston to get up and head that ball back into the middle of the box for Parker. It makes it more challenging. I'm not saying he doesn't clears that ball out of danger, but I'm saying it makes it more challenging.
Well, yeah. I mean, center back
and you're not
the ball
blaming,
his chest.
And you're not blaming the same guy three times for essentially the three goals that were given up by Atlanta United.
And with regards to tomorrow, in terms of concentration, Chicago not a great team from set pieces, but Nikolic, the number nine, leading the MLS in goals scored, he's a straight number nine. He wants to get the ball in the box and finish. So if you see a lapse of concentration from Perez leaving him open, that's the end of it. He's going to put one in the back of the net. So even though maybe we won't see the threat from set pieces we saw against Vancouver, we've got to see better positioning and concentration from the back four, in particular LGP.
Chicago Fire going into this game wanting revenge for the 4-0 win that we put up against them. Again, they went down to 10 men, I think 11 minutes in.
Yeah, it was pretty early. Yeah.
The number or the time. They're going to want to come out, especially with as hot as they are now, they're going to want to come out and try to do much. They want to come out hot. They want to come out and score on us. They want to come out and prove that was just a fluke game.
Yeah.
Again, it all had to do with the red card given very early on. But still, that's something. Even with 10 men, they should not have bunkered as hard as they did for the remainder
even
of the
11
match.
Even 11v11, they came in there to bunker.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think they'll
definitely
want to.
That's not going to happen again.
No.
That's not happening
so
in this
I think Chicago, it's twofold. First of all, you want to prove to it. I mean, there's the revenge factor with Atlanta. But again, you want to continue to show that you're playing a different style of football more successfully than you were earlier in the season. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. And you talk about the differences, Eric, from then when we played them back in March to now, and the big one to me is the shape. They are playing we argued about this. Okay, so you call it a 4-4-2, I call it a 4-4-1-1, whatever.
Yeah, look, it's essentially two forwards. One's on top of each other.
Right.
It's still 4-4-2,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
So, we can all. But anyways, so what they had when they came here was you were playing Solignac underneath Nikolic up front, and since Schweinsteiger has come in, they've switched to that 4-2-3-1 with the two defensive mids and Schweinsteiger and McCarty. Tomorrow will be Juninho most likely protecting the back four, and they've been able to hold on to the ball a little bit. Meanwhile, Solignac has moved wide and taken, I believe it's Arturo Alvarez's position, and they've got him and Akam as two very dangerous wingers. So that, again, just goes to show how one player in Schweinsteiger allowed this team to change their shape, allowed players in Solignac and Nikolic to slide into into their more comfortable positions. I mean, he has just made such an impact, and we're going to see a totally different Chicago team tomorrow. Although you're probably right, Eric, McCarty not being there makes a big, big difference.
I just wonder how much of a difference that makes. Because you see him, if you watch Chicago Fire games, he's the one that's yelling, barking orders at everyone.
And
I just wonder how much of a difference that makes when you pull him off the field and you don't have that constant yelling or a constant ordering and constant barking from your captain that basically lets that. He organizes everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't see Atlanta United do that very much. I don't think organization for the most part. Maybe last week was an example of, especially in that first goal, where organization might have been better or could have been better. And that kind of barking should have been seen from a guy like Parkhurst. But you don't see that a lot with Atlanta United. And it's because I don't think they really need it, to be honest. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that they really need that constant barking, that constant organization.
Well, it's more about the team flowing together.
Right.
I mean, it's
and
about,
maybe he does it. We just don't see it on the screen.
Right.
I don't see it when I'm.
It's just different. It's
exactly,
just different. Yeah, just different is all.
But with McCarty not there, I do wonder what happens to that, because again, you have Janino. You're gonna have Janino and Schweinsteiger, who are gonna be kind of. Schweinsteiger will be more reserved. Janino, I think, will have the freedom to move up, but I do wonder how that changes things.
So really, Schweinsteiger is going to take that McCarty position, it sounds like, sitting deep. I don't know that he's well. What you mentioned, Janino and Schweinsteiger are a bit similar. And I think Janino likes to maraud forward a bit more, but in the sense that they're more creative, deep-lying midfielders, I think they're more similar, whereas McCarty is more of a pure ball winner. So I think certainly they're not a great pairing for each other, and that's something Atlanta United can take advantage of because they're a bit too similar in some ways.
Not only that, I don't know that they are, at this stage in both of their careers, the most technical players. So I know Schweinsteiger can pick out a pass, but I just wonder what happens when he's constantly under pressure.
Look, right.
You see what happens on Miron when you know he's got two players that are constantly marking him, or he's playing against formations where he's outmanned the midfield. You know, what happens to Schweinsteiger when he's in a similar position, or when he's constantly being when Tito Villalba is on him from
absolutely
behind and Yamil Assad is coming on him from the right. You know, what happens in that
this
case?
This would be a great game to have Almirón from the jump.
It
for
would.
Just that reason you to
but
put pressure on those guys.
Look, what happens when Almirón gets in there in the 75th minute?
Right.
What happens
and
when Jesse Martinez gets in there in the 75th minute? And now you've got two fresh guys who press and can do things with the ball.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think this game is going to be decided in the last 15 minutes. So, I think that it's going to be very even throughout. Last 15, 20 minutes is going to be where Atlanta kind of takes control of the game and finds a way to score one or two, and this game is done.
That sounds good to me.
By the 85th minute.
That sounds good to me. It's going to be interesting.
Hope.
And I think you talk about harassing Schweinsteiger. I think Juninho is more the one who could run into some problems on the ball for a few reasons. You mentioned the age, and he's going to be asked to cover a lot of ground in this match. But also, I think he hasn't played a ton this year because of McCarty. He's played, I think, about half the games because of McCarty and Schweinsteiger kind of taking that position. So he's a guy that maybe not completely sharp, not totally match fit. Maybe that's a guy you can take advantage of with your high press.
No, yeah, but look, when we played him... even though they were bunkering and we knew they were going to bunker, they weren't as spread out. You know, you didn't have Akam and Nikolic and Solniak, you know, going bombing up the field like they do now. They're not so much a countering team. They're very much a possession oriented team.
Yeah,
I saw a goal they scored, and I forget who. I think it was against Seattle. It was at least, I think, 10 passes in the final third. And that's one thing I think this team has improved on greatly is their passing in the final third. Mm-hmm. But again, what happens when the press is there?
Right.
What happens when all of a sudden it's Atlanta United, who is just a dangerous high pressing team? What, you know, how does that affect that play in the back? That's my question. It's not so much what their attackers can do; it's what their back line, what Schweinsteiger and what Janino are going to be able to do when the press is applied.
Sure, and certainly we talk about pressing those two defensive midfielders. I think the back four is probably the weakness for Chicago in a few senses. One thing I've noticed is they've shuffled the back four quite a bit this season, so maybe that's another area where you can expose them with your high press is the back four as well. I think that might be the key then. Is certainly who's going to win the battle through the center of the pitch, because the key to Chicago going is the two defensive midfielders and De Leeuw, as it's pronounced, Deliu, as the attacking mid, who's also very good at holding on to the ball and passing. So those three want to keep it, play with each other, combine together. If the high press does its job, that is not a factor tomorrow. We'll see.
Look, theoretically, this a win in Chicago could bump Atlanta United into a playoff spot. It's still very early in the season to really care about that stuff, but we are below the red line right now in eighth place. The New England Revolution ahead of us with 20 points, Red Bulls with 20 points, and Columbus Crew, we're not going to reach them, obviously, as we have 18, they have 22. So we can really solidify that sixth spot, potentially. I'm not actually exactly sure who the Red Bulls play or the Revolution play, but getting a win against the second-place team in the East right now, as hot as they are, would be a big statement coming off of that Vancouver loss. Again, they stay with 25 points, and they've been – they're 6-0-1, the one draw at home and seven. It's a great showing from Chicago Fire, and that's not a place that's very threatening for away teams.
Yeah.
It's not like they have a ridiculous home crowd at their home games. You know, it's a place you can – really go in and win if you put forth the effort. If guys like Kratz, who presumably is, in my opinion, is going to play in that midfield, in that Almidon spot, the defense can mark up and do the things that we're so used to them do. We're accustomed for them to do. You know, if Tito can get involved, if Gressel can continue to be a dominant on the wing, if, you know, Yamil Assad can get, maybe he's asked to do a little more this game because of the absence of Almidon for three quarters of the game. Maybe he's asked to do a little more. Maybe he's even pulled centrally into the midfield. But it would be a big statement. This would be a huge win for Atlanta United, not only in terms of points, but it would be huge in terms of just getting back into kind of that rhythm of things, you know, getting back into winning and putting a good result after that Vancouver loss. And as bad as that Vancouver loss, you really want to show your fan base that you can go into another hostile environment and be like, all right, yeah, we messed up last week. We're going to make it up this week, and boom, here's the proof.
And we did see the last time we saw a bad performance on the road, we did see a response in Portland and then come home and win a couple games at home. So
you know that they were upset at the way they played in Vancouver. They know that. We know that.
Better be.
I mean, if you look at the quotes that came out this week, it's they haven't all been negative, but, I mean, for the most part, they know they messed up. They know that set pieces was an issue. They know that they need to improve in those areas.
There seemed to be a genuine understanding that it was individual errors that caused the game.
Let's not take away the fact they only scored one goal. This is a team that scores two or three.
Yeah, and barely threatened.
I forget what their average is. It's one. What is it? I can see it.
26 on the year, 28 on the year.
1.3 at a game. They scored the most goals in MLS, I think, as of... At least in the Eastern Conference. I haven't looked at the Western Conference. But, I mean, it's a team that scores. Yeah, they've scored the most goals in MLS. And they scored one last week against a team that lost to DC United. Was it DC United?
Simple as that. Yeah, lost to DC United. Lost 1-0 to DC United.
Although
a bit unlucky,
United
but
too.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, one of the things is, you know, we're just like, oh, they lost to DC United. Oh, we lost to them too. At what point does Atlanta United start to put in some results that show that they are a small step above that?
Yeah.
Go win at home every match, go on the road and lose every match. And beating Chicago would definitely speak volumes in that regard.
I want to see a good bounce back. That's what I want to see. After that demoralizing loss last week, I want to see a good bounce back. Even without Almidon, again, you're going to have Martinez back, and it would be awesome if he got a chance to score in the last game he was able to score in. You know, facing that same team again.
Yeah, true.
It would be fantastic. I mean, that's what I want to see more than anything. I want to see a win, but at the same time, I want to see a bounce back performance.
Yeah, you want to see a response.
It could be a draw away with missing pieces, but I think that as long as it's, you know, 1-1, you know, if they're down by one, I think that this team, that Atlanta United, can really turn it around in the last 15 minutes if they're trailing by one. Or if they're tied, the last 15 minutes, I think, is where this game is going to really be decided on either side.
That would be interesting. And you know what's interesting about Atlanta United is so many matches that we've played this year have not been decided in the last 15 minutes. It's been a Vancouver or New York, or it's been a Houston or Chicago where we're well up or well down in the last 15 minutes. But I don't know, man. Chicago dominated FC Dallas and Seattle at home. It's going to be really, really difficult.
I know, but I get it. I understand. I'm not saying I'm like overly super high confident about
this
team.
I mean, you were on
it
about Vancouver last week, though, saying, look, MLS. But
that's a trap game. That's different. You know, you don't go into Chicago riding that high.
Right.
You know,
right.
This team also, Chicago also went into Seattle, who's a little down right now, and beat them 4-1. Like, weird things happen in MLS. And I think that, again, as it happened to us, it can happen to Chicago Fire. We just got to be on our game. And I think, again, the recipe, the kind of the scenario, the circumstances are there for Atlanta United to go into Chicago. And since we're playing a much more open and spread out Chicago team, I think it benefits Atlanta United. I don't think, again, we're not going to see this bunkering team. I think the one area where Atlanta United has struggled with is bunkering teams. You look at, who am I thinking of?
DC
United
is the main one that comes to mind for me.
Vancouver, not so much. Although did they?
They sat, but they were really aggressive.
I just look at that. Even against who was it? Even against Chicago Fire, it took them forever to score.
Look at the first 30 minutes against Houston.
Yeah,
I mean Houston had some chances. I think we have to accept the fact that Atlanta United are going to concede opportunities on the counterattack. When you bomb forward like that, I mean, you've got the term right, Eric, suicidally high. Yeah. And that's not even necessarily a negative thing. I mean, that puts the other team under a lot of pressure as well. But we have to accept there's a reason that Alec Cann is top five in the league in saves. You know, we are going to give up opportunities on the counterattack. That being said, that's why you can't give up set piece opportunities, self-inflicted stuff, because you're naturally going to be in some difficult positions, have your defenders isolated 1v1 when you're bombing forward the way Atlanta United do.
All right, so we have if you're on a Facebook live feed and want to hit us up with a couple questions before we leave, or stick around for another 5 minutes or so. Kevin Brown, do you think Gressel will continue his streak of having a point in this game as an assist or a goal or something to that effect? I think so. I mean,
you say yes?
I say yes.
I say no, but I'm just playing the law of averages
on
that.
Yes.
But
I think that he's proven he belongs on that right side. Doug Robertson, as much credit as I give him for all the coverage he does at Atlanta United, he's under the impression, or he thinks that he's going to be moved in to that midfield role. And I think he looked so bad toward the end of that toward the end of that run where he was in the midfield that once he was moved out wide, he looked so much better that there's no moving back. There's no moving back.
Yeah.
The only thing I think you might move him back into the midfield is in a super sub role,
right,
for someone once Joseph Martinez comes back. I don't think you're moving him back
centrally. I'd be shocked if he goes back centrally. I mean, to me, when he started out wide in Portland, that was Tata Martino saying this is your last chance to establish yourself in the first 11 because you're clearly not one of our best three center midfielders, and obviously he's passed the test with flying colors.
I don't see why you change what's been working up top.
Sure.
I mean, Gressel was part of the solution or part of the goal in Vancouver. And he's been huge on that wing, on that right side for the last four or five games now. It's just, why would you change that? And that's why I don't know that that's going to happen. I would be shocked. I would be disappointed in Tata Martino if he moved Gressel into that Almirón role, which I don't think he's suited for at all.
No, I mean we've seen that. The proof is in the pudding. I mean we've seen it,
likely to get Almirón type performances out of Yamil Assad, maybe Kratz. I'm not expecting a lot of things from Kratz. I'm just expecting him to be a game manager from that position.
Complete
don't
passes.
Don't do anything crazy. Don't try to get over. Don't try to overdo it. But at the same time, be a guy that connects with his forwards, with the wingers, and try to make something happen that way.
It'll be interesting. I think certainly
find those passes out wide. I think is what he's going to be.
I think the number 10, whoever that might be, is going to be asked to go a little more box to box than Almirón for a couple reasons. First of all, I just think I think Kratz might be a little more naturally suited to that role. Although to be honest, I haven't seen a ton of him to really make that judgment for sure. But also the reason you bring up Eric is you want to go those center mids go head-to-head 3v3 and not give those guys any time and space on the ball, which is another reason to have your number 10 perhaps drop a little deeper into midfield and pressure those central players.
It'll be interesting to see what Tata Martino does tomorrow. Again, that game, what time is that? 5 o'clock, I think, tomorrow?
What was it? 4:30, wasn't it?
4:30. I think it's 5 o'clock on the official, like that's when the game actually starts. but it is going to be fun, and it's going to be fun to watch this team get back at it. 4 o'clock is what.
4 o'clock, excuse me. Yeah.
5 o'clock, what's before Eastern?
I don't know, somewhere in the ocean, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
4 o'clock Eastern, Atlanta United, Chicago Fire, that game taking on coming on tomorrow, and I'm excited for it. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's the same as when we went to Portland when we said, you know what, you play a game like you did against New York, just what you want is the next week to go right the wrongs. And certainly did that to an extent in Portland. Now you have another bad defeat to Vancouver on the road. So I think you'll be very happy to get a chance to go back right on the road, play a strong opponent, and exercise those demons. I think it might be the game of the day, the game of the weekend even. I think we might see some goals. Yeah, I think the way Chicago plays at home and Atlanta.
I think it's going to be so wide open.
Yeah, and
I said that a couple times now, like 3 weeks in a row, I think now.
Right. Well, but I think we've seen a lot of wide open. But I think the reason for that is, particularly when you go away from home, you'll see a lot of MLS teams like we saw with Houston. They're a different tactical side in that they want to defend. Atlanta United plays the same way everywhere they go, which naturally is going to, I think, particularly away from home where things are harder on you, or it's going to make things a little more stretched and chaotic. So I think, again, we're looking at another fast-paced end-to-end match, and the key is who wins that battle in the center of midfield.
Score predictions?
I told you I'm not positive about this. I'll say 3-2 Chicago.
I'm going to go with 3-1 Atlanta.
All right. And please be right.
I think two of those goals are going to happen in the last 15 minutes or so.
Okay, that sounds good.
I mean, on Joseph Martinez,
that's a big part of it. When your confidence is low, you're back on the road. Stay in the game. Stay in the match, and then win it at the end. That sounds like a good recipe for success to me.
Yep, that'll do it for us. For everyone watching on Facebook Live,
thanks, guys,
so much. Appreciate you guys tuning in. If you're listening on the recorded version. Again, visit CrossFit Vesuvio on the webs, on the Facebooks, if you want, if you're looking for a CrossFit gym. I know that I've been going for the last 6 months or so. Yeah, 6 months now. And it has been fantastic. I am a kind of different person. Much more confidence, much thinner now, much more slim. Still got a ways to go, but trying to just get into decent soccer shape is ultimately a goal here.
There we go.
My legs are like on fire every time I take a step right now, and
that means you got a great workout.
I move rather awkwardly up and down the stairs, so that's what I've got going for me. But join us on social media tomorrow. We'll be talking it up. We'll be tweeting out.
We'll be there
live during the game. So make sure you follow me, Eric G. Quintana. At Eric G. Quintana. You can follow the podcast at MOTS Podcast,
and you can follow me at Josh B. 914.
Dirty South Soccer, follow them at Dirty South Sock, and make sure you're following them for all the latest coverage on Atlanta United and everything Atlanta United related. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, see you later, Atlanta.